Moncrief on News Talk.
Violent offenders must be rehabilitated if we are to end the scourge of violence against women. So wrote former Senator Maria Cahill in the Sunday Independent, and she joins me now. Good afternoon, Maria.
Good afternoon, Anton. How are you?
I'm very good. When I suppose the big question is, the aspiration is laudable, the methodology is challenging. How do you rehabilitate violent offenders, particularly offenders who have been violent against women?
I think there are a number of things there. I mean, first of all, I'm not sure that it is anecdotal. The evidence is there that rehabilitation does work. So, for example, if you look at recidivism rates across countries, which is one of the things that I did do in the piece, Norway has a much less recidivism rate, albeit it's very hard to measure these because some countries measure it by year. Other countries like Ireland do it every 2 to 3 years. But theirs was around 20 to 25%. If you contrast that with America, for example, which has a punitive system which locks up offenders for much longer, theirs sits in around 82%. Ireland is less again, but I think that in terms of how much it costs us to house someone in a prison, for example, €84,067 for one prison space for a year. You know, can you think of the difference that we could make actually by trying to target that amount of money into rehabilitation in order to prevent repeat offending? In relation to the violence against women aspect of things and in terms of violent offending, I think that's kind of, if you don't mind me saying so, Anton, it's a bit of a headline statement. There are a number of factors, and I happen to be a victim of violent offences separate from the ones that I became public for, if you like, or come into the public consciousness for. So it's something that I take very seriously in relation to the subject. But, there is a difference between someone who is a first offence violent offender in relation to violence against women and someone who is a repeat offender. So the nuance is there. And if we can target people in the early stages of offending in terms of dealing with their rage or their anger, you have a much better chance of protecting society going forward than what you would if you just leave them, in prison without any targeted intervention.
And target them how?
Well, there are a range of things. There are things like, for example, anger management programs. There are targeted intervention around wraparound services. For example, we know, and studies, again, worldwide will show that not putting someone in prison for lengthy sentences in relation to first offences on that not only costs society less, but there's less chance for something which they call cross-contamination, learning, if you like, from other offenders in relation to how to commence offences. It also, if you help someone to live within society, and that's what rehabilitation and the essence of it is all around, if they have steady income, for example, for steady employment, they have the help of community, they have family support, they're much less likely to offend than someone who doesn't have any and all of those things. That's not to say that there shouldn't be an element of punishment for a crime. That's a completely different thing and a different subject. Actually, of course, there should be recognition of harm done to victims. As I say, I am one myself. So, that's something that I would always keep in the back of my head. But in terms of preventing the cycle of violence, we have to be able to do something different than what we're doing at the minute. And what we're doing at the minute is having a public conversation, if you like, around punitive measures for people. And that's what the Doyle, I would imagine, will focus on next week. People are looking at sentencing guidelines, increasing those. And all of that conversation is worthwhile. But within that, we should also be having a conversation around how to stop the cycle of violence, how to tackle that, and it isn't airy fairy left wing nonsense, if you like. It's something that's real and tangible and can be done. And the proof of that is actually in the figures in terms of reducing recidivism. And Norway is a prime example of that.
You talked about the one of the downsides of a custodial sentence being cross contamination. Does that cross contamination apply to all types of offences?
Well, I'm not the expert on it, Anton, but just looking anecdotally at it in terms of the prison population and the Irish figures, and the Central Statistics Office release those figures every 3 years. One of those figures is in relation to repeat offending, and the highest number of people, or highest number of offences, I suppose, the ones most likely to reoffend, if you like, in Ireland, are people with theft and burglary offences. Domestic violence or violence against women comes down subsequently, as does sexual offending, if you like. But over 7 in 10, I think, re-offended for burglary and theft offences in Ireland within 3 years of being released. Now, there are different things in terms of recidivism. So some of it would be measured by conviction rates. Other would be measured by rate of reoffending after release. So, you know, we need to be careful. We're not mixing the two. But certainly what I wanted to do in looking at the piece was to have that conversation, an all-encompassing conversation around how to actually stop the cycle or at least prevent it, you know, from happening. Random street attacks are quite rare in relation to Ireland. You know, yes, they happen, but on a scale of a continuum of violence, actually, you're probably more at risk being in the home. And, you know, one of the things that I did write in the piece for the Sunday Independent was looking at the government providing refuge spaces for every county in Ireland. Not every county has them. And we also need to then look at what wraparound services exist for young people and teenagers coming through who may be witnessing domestic violence, in order to prevent those children growing up believing that violence is acceptable.
And can I ask, Maria, shorn of the hard data in respect of the cross-contamination for recidivism for different types of crimes, I would imagine that people would look and say, well, we do have situations where you have where burglary and theft becomes not only a job, but somebody's way of life. In some cases, you have intergenerational criminality where burglary and theft is a part of it's the family business. Is somebody in that kind of way of crime going into jail with other people who did the same thing, you can see how wisdom might be shared and you get a university of crime. Does the same apply to the random street attacker? Does the same apply with the domestic violence abuser?
Well, again, I'm not the expert on this, on particular prison statistics, you know, but I think anecdotally, every suggestion would say that if you put a lot of people and house them all under the same unit with a lot of the same type of offences, that certainly the risk increases in relation to learned behaviour, for example. So if someone is outside of the community with family support, with proper treatment in relation to their behaviour. So let's take an example. If someone has a tendency for explosive rage and that translates into then using their fists on the street, there are a lot of things that can be done outside of custody in terms of helping that person to moderate their behaviour so that it doesn't become an incident where they then use their fists on the street. You know, that, yes, can also be done in custody, but isn't it much better to have someone who can learn how to live in society, who can learn, can unlearn behaviour, if you like, in relation to how they conduct themselves, and that they have the stability of a community around them, than simply putting them into custody, doing nothing, and then releasing them onto the streets where they haven't had any targeted intervention? To me, that just makes sense. And again, as a victim, as someone who has come through the criminal justice system, you know, for me, I would much rather that someone is rehabilitated so that they can live their life as a responsible member of society than be left to rot in a prison costing the taxpayer £84,000, you know, a year.
Although I suppose we can't really talk about this topic without asking the obvious question of how do you balance the opposing needs, the needs of the victim and those close to the victim to see, quotes, justice being done and punishment meted out, and the broader need of society to see an example set as a deterrent to others.
Well, I disagree. I think it's quite simple, actually, because what judges are supposed to do around the country is measure the level of risk to society and balance that with justice being seen to be done. So if someone is in front of a judge and they don't, the assessment is, and the, you know, there are organisations like probation, for example, in Ireland, which are deemed to provide those assessments. If the level of risk to the public is deemed to be low, in terms of repeat offending, then someone can be managed within the community. If it is deemed to be high and they can't be managed within the community, then that's where the custodial sentence comes into play.
But if you have a situation,
it's married against the type of offence which actually meets the custodial threshold. So if you have an example where someone is beaten badly on the street, not to talk about any specific case, and the custodial threshold is reached and it is deemed by a court, you know, that it is warranted in order to put that individual into custody to protect the public, I don't have an issue with that.
But just to be honest, so that I'm 100% clear, Marie, in that context, let's say you have somebody who is beaten in the street and you have an objective assessment that suggests that the likelihood of reoffence is relatively small. You don't believe that a custodial sentence is merited to show the victim that the attacker has been punished and to show broader society that such attacks are punished?
No, well, I think it has to be. Obviously, the victim obviously has to be, the level of harm has to be taken into account. It won't be in every case that a victim, for example, believes that someone should be in prison. I mean, there are instances, I give you a personal instance of that. You know, as I say, I've been a victim myself. In fact, a person is in custody at the minute in relation to offences. You know, I would much rather that individuals, leaving that aside, have an opportunity for rehabilitation and can conduct themselves properly out in the public, and that there is less risk to the public than to be incarcerated and the potential for repeat offending to occur. So that's what I'm saying. It's not. It's, that's a totally different thing than a judge deciding that a custodial threshold has been released or has been reached. Sometimes someone in custody doesn't actually address or tackle the root cause of violence, and I think that we need to have a conversation around what actually does.
Maria, thank you very much for your time. That's Maria Cahill, former senator and Sunday Independent columnist.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.